Everybody ready? Deb, ready?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
We'll call the March 21st meeting of the Firefighter Advisory Committee to order. Great to see everybody here this morning. Mr. Secretary, you're up.
Yes, sir. We'll start with roll call.
Let's just start with Mr. Collier and work down the table. Just say who you are, where you're from, what you do.
Jason Collier, Assistant Fire Chief, Highland Village Fire Department.
Keith Schmidt, Fire Chief, City of Gonzales Fire Department.
Daniel Buford, Firefighter Bryan Fire Department.
Daniel DeYeer, Deputy Chief, Dallas Fire Department.
Mike Wisco, Fire Chief of Galveston.
Jim Reedy, Lieutenant, Ladder 46, San Antonio.
Ken Swindle, Chrome Fire Department, Fire Chief.
Vince Abrego, McAllen Fire Department, Lieutenant.
Daniel Anderson, Dumas Fire Department, Lieutenant.
We're all here.
Yeah, they need help. The lieutenants are ganging up.
There you go. All right. Number two.
Item number two, discussion and possible action on the election of officers.
Seems like we just did this.
So, too.
What do we want to do? We got to do one at a time, do them all at once. Don't care. Anybody got a motion?
I'm making a motion.
Jason.
That we currently maintain the as current with Mike Wisco as supervising officer, Daniel DeYeer is second, and Keith Smith is our secretary.
Second.
You get that?
Is that good?
Right. I believe the motion is just to keep all the officers as they are.
That's correct.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item number three, adoption of the December 13, 2018 Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting minutes.
So I know everybody read these before we got here. Is there anything that needs to change?
Motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
Second.
Get that? Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item number four, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, updated reference list for the hazardous materials awareness curriculum. B, updated reference list for the hazardous materials incident commander curriculum. And C, updated reference list for the hazardous materials operations mission-specific competencies curriculum.
We're honored to have Pat McAuliffe here with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat McAuliffe. I'm the presiding officer for the Curriculum and Testing Committee. What you have before you are some proposed changes to the reference materials related to the hazardous materials section of our certification curriculum. At the awareness level, we are recommending a change from hazardous material awareness and operations second edition to the third edition. This is the Jones and Bartlett book. The same change will apply to the hazardous material incident command curriculum, again going from the second to the third edition of the Jones and Bartlett book. And then for the hazardous materials operation, there's an additional change, and that is in the hazardous materials for first responders going from the fourth edition to the fifth edition, and that's a IFSTA publication out of Stillwater, Oklahoma. So those are the only changes that we are proposing at this time that require your approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. When I look at some of these that are 08 editions and that, mm-hmm. do we look for upgraded, or do we just wait till they upgrade, or is there more current? Do they look for more current stuff? Or
they do. You know, obviously the publishers that write the books that tend to follow the NFPA professional qualification standards, they update when the standard updates. So that kind of forces us. We have to update our curriculum for IFSAC purposes. And in addition, when that textbook publisher changes, we got to update there as well. So we're constantly looking at the different materials that are out there. Some of these resources, even though they seem seemingly old, they're not replaced. But as long as you can still get them and they're valuable, we're going to include them in our reference list. We have had situations in the past where books were unavailable. I think probably some of you may remember the incident safety officer book about 4 or 5 years ago. That was, and it, we just flat got stuck. There was nothing we could do because the publishers just were not willing to publish, and there was a sale involved of authors' rights and so on and so forth. So we were kind of victims of that, if you will. But that's a long answer to your question, but yes, we are keeping update.
But it was a good answer.
Well, thank you. Any other questions? Thoughts, comments, concerns, complaints?
You're doing a fine job, Pat.
Well,
for the record, you're doing
I was just telling Grace, we started the Curriculum and Testing Committee in 1989. So I've been a part of it since then, and so we've been here 30 years. Long time. So if any of you have access to establishing some kind of state pension for me, I would appreciate any kind of motion.
Is there a motion to
a motion.
Second.
Can we do each all at once or
I don't see why we could.
A motion to approve all.
I'll second it.
A motion and a second. Any other discussion? Thank you, Pat. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 5, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
Yeah.
Committee members, this is a... the original proposal had come from one of our commissioners requesting consideration for personnel doing specifically TEKS Pro Board courses. They were running into some issues where they had what they felt like were otherwise qualified people who weren't able to meet the criteria in our rules as currently established. So it provides for consideration of Pro Board credentials specific to be used for the instructors specifically for TEKS Pro Board courses.
So this wouldn't apply to anybody else, just TEKS?
Pro Board. TEKS Pro Board, correct. These would be courses for which they would have gotten a court training prior approval done, courses for which these people are going to be getting, in all likelihood, state certification from.
This is strictly TEKS?
Correct.
So this is
we don't look at any other training providers out of jurisdiction as far as that goes. But yes, this is specifically for TEKS and specifically for TEKS Pro Board courses.
So to me, this looks like a bracketing at the state legislation, which...
It's not unlike what we did for the wildland stuff. If you look in this same chapter here in 427, we provided for some additional credentialing of instructors to be considered for wildland courses because of some of the issues they were running into.
What's the root problem, that TEKS can't get the instructors? Or?
Well, I think it mainly had to do with the lead instructor for these courses. That a lot of times these lead instructors would be, you know, in their explanation, well qualified. They held Pro Board credentials in that particular discipline. They even would hold Instructor 2 credentials in those disciplines, but they may be Pro Board credentials as opposed to state certification credentials, TCFP credentials.
Well, so, I mean, I'm supposing that I may know partially why TEKS can't get instructors in some of these places is there's some pay issues for paying people, because I've had it happen to me personally. But I have gotten some feedback on this from fire marshal and a fire inspector chief, and they were both against it, only because it's just that one entity doing it, and I guess we should have oversight, especially over how things are instructed. I don't know about the wildland thing. I'm thinking the wildland thing was probably more a function of there just wasn't anything out there at the time, and there was some confusion about NWCG and what we were doing. That was the issue with that. This is a little different. They can't get instructors or their lead instructors because they don't meet our certification. Then they need to meet our criteria, I would think. If they're going to teach in this state, everybody knows that you got to have a instructor certification from us. So why is Teach being treated differently than the IFF or some other entity that has pro board certifications?
To me, this is so, we're kind of self-credentialing in this.
And number one, it talks about being credentialed by Teaks for Teaks. So. Anybody else?
In the past, were they able to go either way as far as coming in TCFP or pro board? I mean, what I see here is it a testing issue from pro board, the guys teaching the courses, you know, because the pro board test and our test is a little different, isn't it? It's not.
The testing systems are have a lot of similarities. They also have some differences in the way they're.
So it has to be taught different in order to be able to pass the test.
I couldn't say. I don't hold any pro board credentials, so I'm not familiar enough with it to know that.
Well, and I think the other thing is I know that there's a lot of industry people that teach for TEKS that don't have our instructor certification, and they're qualified. But when it's all said and done, like Jason was saying, self-certification over and above an agency, a regulatory agency like us, instead of doing it like us, I just think that sets a bad precedent. Plus, you're singling out one entity to be able to do this, which if we've done it once, it was a bad precedent and was probably more of an emergency nature. This is not an emergency. This is not an emergency for the state of Texas. This is apparently only an issue for TEKS that they should be able to solve inside without having to come to us to do it for
them. Is there anybody here from TEKS or Pro Board that could weigh in on the issue?
I don't believe so.
Tim, help me remember, what year did we start recognizing Pro Board? 15, 16? It's been
a couple of years.
Yeah, been 3 or 4 years.
During that time frame, yeah.
And this is just coming up. This wasn't an issue before 6 months ago.
If it was, we weren't aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What's your pleasure, gentlemen?
I make a motion that we reject this proposal and leave the language the way it is, the current language.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
There's a motion and a second to reject the changes. So we would send forth a rejection to the commission. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 6, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 PAC Chapter 449, head of a fire department.
The language being added here, essentially what it does is it allows for more opportunity for individuals to qualify for head of department who might not have any one of the qualification routes. An example might be they have 3.5 years of our certified time but maybe they had come from somewhere else and they have 15 years from another jurisdiction somewhere, that sort of thing. So they, or say 8 years from another jurisdiction, where they don't have enough of either one, I guess would be the better way to say it. They don't have enough of any one thing to do it. So what these things do is they would provide for combinations of credentialing and experience to allow somebody to qualify. And I don't know if y'all have had a chance to read through this. I mean, as an example, looking at number five, what we're saying there is that they would have a combined total of 5 years of experience using our certification, which is A, and essentially either one of B or C, either time from another jurisdiction or volunteer time. Either one of those combined with our certification. And in this case, they would have to do 2 years of one of those others to count as 1 year of time in this particular case. And as you go through these, you'll see different combinations of these essentially doing the same thing.
So the same amount of years is going to be required, just the mix is going to be different?
Really, that's what it's going to come down to. In this case, the 5 years of experience, what we're essentially saying here with this first one is, let's say you only have 3 years of our certified time, but you do have some significant time in one of these other two, then that can be considered toward the five-year requirement. And if you look at number one up here at the beginning of this thing, that's what that one is. That's that option, 5 years of certified time. So here we're saying maybe you don't have 5 years of our certified time, but you have some significant experience outside of our system. We can look at a combination of those two to get you your 5 years.
Wasn't this looked at and changed about 4 or 5 years ago? Didn't we go through something? What was it we went through?
I don't recall. I don't think I've ever seen
when this.
When this was created. Oh God, Deb, help me out.
It was probably
4 or 5 years.
When you say changed, what do you mean? This is something like this.
It was no. What I'm saying is, there was a creation of different levels that a person could come in and get this particular head of department. If they had been out of the state, if they had been a fireman in the state, if they had...
You have those now. That's what you're seeing in 1 through 4.
Right, but it seemed like this is... It's like... And I read it, and the whole time I'm thinking, okay, there's somebody out there that we have to do something for so that they can make sure and get enough time in to be able to meet that criteria.
And what facilitated this?
This has been as a result of different discussions that have occurred, you know, and we see this occasionally happen where individuals who might be well qualified or would appear to be well qualified don't meet any of the criteria in 1 through 4. So again, this just provides additional opportunities for them to qualify.
So this does happen.
It's not unheard of for this sort of thing to occur, to where you don't have quite enough time. But these 1 through 4.
I remember when we talked about this 5 year deal. I mean, it was a subject of great discussion, getting to this 5 year the way it was set, the way it's set up now. And I mean, there was a lot of thought and effort that went into that. Mm-hmm. So I would hate to switch something that's. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of.
I just want to know that it's not piecemealed for some particular individual to get to this point. That's the only thing I'm looking at. Because last time we had an influx of people coming from out of state, I think, that had been in, and it kind of brought a lot of this stuff together. Wasn't that right, Jason?
Well, the big change in that was either taking the test, which was the 3 and 4, versus the process that we have now.
Mm-hmm. That's when we switched to
this certification. Has been around since the late 90s.
No.
This was a huge ordeal.
But I knew some chiefs that were coming in that had been out of state, that were in state, had left state, had been out of the business for 5 years or close, and came back in and needed to get reinstated.
But that's what this wasn't the part that changed in that. It was the part that now that we require them to meet with their
compliance officer,
fill out forms, go through all that. That's what we changed. That was big.
We did
that
away
the
with
change.
The exam. There was an exam.
And there was an exam
point
that
for certain people you had to take a,
right,
at a department exam. That went away.
That was the big change.
I just hate to reduce what we have now. If there's no, I mean, look, people in all walks of life, you may not qualify for a job that you're trying to get. But there's a pathway here that you can qualify for the job. So I'm very reluctant to change this because this has served us pretty well, I think, and it was a pretty big compromise when we put it together too. So
staff developed these options, you know. So this the options that you're looking at here didn't come from somebody else. The idea was hatched beyond us. But so that again, we certainly aren't looking to try to. Obviously, we're not looking to try to allow unqualified people to qualify for the positions. The idea is that we're. Hopefully, what this would do is it would expand the pool of people that could be considered for a position.
So I'm going to have to be the dinosaur and tell you that I'm opposed to any changes based on the reason this was even created when it was. It was designed for just that, to prevent anybody from coming to Texas and being a fire chief. And I'm going to stick by that. Do as you feel, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and thanks to the staff for doing all the work, because I know that we've talked about this before. But, I just don't see the emergency nature of fixing this. There's no real problem. There's plenty of candidates around this state, and even plenty of qualified candidates that are coming in from out of state. So, I mean, I see it in my limited role. I see it all the time. These guys probably see it more so than me. So, I mean, I don't think they're having any trouble filling the chief spots with good people. So,
after going through a chief's position for 6 months, I disagree. I think the candidate pool of good quality chiefs is limited.
That's only in the metroplex.
What you guys want to do?
Anybody got any commentary?
I got a quick question. So if an individual serves as a volunteer fire chief in his organization and that organization becomes paid, he goes and gets certified, he could automatically become a head of that department as a fire chief of the certified organization
Without getting into all the nuts and bolts of that particular scenario, he's going to have to qualify for head of department just like anybody else.
Okay.
With whatever time he or she has, that's what's going to be looked at. As long as they have one of the criteria listed currently in 1 through 4 here, as long as they've got enough of one of those, then they could qualify for head of department.
I'll make a motion that we leave the wording as it is.
Second.
Motion and a second for no changes. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. And really, for the record, I think what we have in place is a good system right now. Everybody did a lot of hard work on this.
Any other comments?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. So all those in favor?
Change
it. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Both?
I oppose it.
All right. Get that down.
You only get one demerit for that.
Gosh, I need about 10. I normally don't do that.
Item seven, discussion and possible action regarding rule review for 37 TAC Chapter 435, firefighter safety.
So, Mr. Chairman, this was per your thoughts in the last meeting. It's here in case y'all want to have any additional discussion about it or not.
Yeah, and I believe it was driven all around the earlier discussion we had that back on here as far as the compliance inspections. If there was any way that the inspectors or the staff felt we could further assist them in that inspection process.
And just to refresh, in the discussion that we had, Paul was up here. I don't know if Paul's in the room at the
he's
moment.
Yeah, he's back in the back.
You know, we had talked about how there some of the way the some of the rule language is written in 435 is not particularly consistent from one section to another. It has not created an undue hardship on our compliance officers. They manage the program quite well. Anyway, so it's not like it's a critical issue that has to be addressed as far as that goes.
So a couple of weeks ago at the Fire Chiefs Conference, I heard some rumbling that there is a new form or a form prototype, inspection prototype out there.
There is. It's a much more detailed inspection form that a couple of the compliance officers are already using. They'll all be using it in short order. What we're trying to do right now is we're trying to hit all of the regional meetings as they occur so we can show the form to the fire chiefs in that area. It doesn't consist of anything that hasn't already been expected of departments, but it does provide a lot more detail is in terms of what we would look at, what they would be expected to do, that kind of thing. So hopefully it will help in terms of transparency. It will help in terms of them knowing.
I guess one of the concerns that was brought about a couple of weeks ago is that it's not anywhere that anybody can see it. And so there's a fear that there's some new requirements that they're not having access to be able to see it.
Well, and I think we could have done a much better job in how we've begun to roll this thing out. We've been hesitant to put it out there until we had it in a good finished form. You know, a couple of the guys, like I say, are using it with the idea that there may be things in it that we need to revise before we really get a finished product out there. And I think we're just pretty much there. So we'll certainly have it up on the website. Everybody will be able to get to it. And that's the idea. That's the idea, so that everybody knows what would be expected of it in an inspection.
Has there ever been any thought about having a compliance officer go to these, like the State Farmers and Fire Marshals Convention, the TSAF Convention, the Fire Chiefs Convention, and set up a table and at least be a resource and put some of this stuff out?
Well, we're at the Chiefs Convention Conference. We're at SFFMA. We're there. We have not heard from TSAF. We're happy to do that.
Okay.
You know, if we get an invite. We actually have talked about, really, about the need, and we hope that we can have these organizations consider providing us with some workshop time, you know, maybe where we have some breakout sessions during the conference, whether it's submitting training prior approvals and that whole system and how that works, or compliance inspections or whatever it might be. We feel like that might also help if they would allow us that time. So we're looking at trying to do that, too.
We'll get to work on the TSAF one today.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we'd be happy to be there. Yeah, we try to make a point to be at every one of them that we can, okay. You know, that we're allowed to be there. They'll give us a table or a booth, we'll be there.
Not to put anybody on the spot, I think we've got a couple of chiefs, Chief White's here, and this is your meeting, attending a meeting to meet the head of the department.
Yes.
If you have any suggestions going forward that you could relay to staff on how we could improve that process to make you familiar with what you have to do.
And all. To have them set up a booth where you can go and physically talk to someone.
Yeah, and actually, practice-wise, at least till now, we have typically had, tried to have somebody from testing and somebody from certification at the booth, at the table, because that's usually where the vast majority of questions come from, or in those two areas. But it's certainly not an insurmountable idea to have the compliance officer for that area stop in, too, and be there for a while.
Yeah, and I would think on the compliance part of it, the rank-and-file people probably don't know and probably wouldn't mind being educated on what the compliance process is and sure what they're looking for.
So. Of course, and again, that's I think that that's why we think it probably requires more than a few minutes at the booth.
Yeah.
That if we had some workshop time, we could really lay this thing out and show folk, and I think we would probably alleviate a lot of misunderstandings out there and misconceptions about what we do and what we don't do and that sort of thing.
And there'd probably be a lot of questions.
And that would be okay. That'd be the idea, to be able to field those.
Okay.
We'll work on that. Does anybody see any need for any action here? All right, so we'll leave this alone with no action.
Item number 8, discussion of the 2018 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and submission to the state fire marshal's office.
Grace is here.
Good morning.
I like the fact that we're doing this in March and not in June, so it's a step in the right direction.
Me too, for sure. Well, here you have the first draft of the injury report, and all of the numbers are going to be changing because they're still trickling in, the injury reports. So if people could start sending those in and finishing up 2018, that would be great.
Grace, if you would, too, describe what we discovered the other day on that, on the duplicated data, because that makes a big difference in the numbers we're seeing here.
Right. Well, as you all know, we have a new system in place for submitting injury reports. So we're going through and trying to really tweak it as much as we can so that it gets better and easier for people to use and more accurate as the data is being submitted. And so we're still coming across areas where we need to make changes to the programming and things like that. So we found that it seems like a lot of people are submitting their injury reports and accidentally creating, you know, additional people who have been injured. Even though it's only been one, it's coming up as like three people were injured, for example, because they're accidentally copying the individual information. And so issues like this are coming up, and we're working with the programming staff to come up with fixes and ways that this won't happen in the future. But so just so you know, the numbers are going to be changing significantly probably in a lot of these reports as we go through and kind of clean it up.
Okay.
If I can add to that too, I spoke with Darrell, one of our IT guys, this morning. I think the bigger problem isn't necessarily the way he's seeing it. The problem isn't necessarily the number of people injured. And you're actually seeing in this new report that there is a difference between the people and the actual injuries reported. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because you could have an individual with two different injuries. So that's why that number has now been split out. So that's a new thing with this particular version. And apparently, according to him, it looked like what was happening was the same. They had the individual pulled up to report, and they had the same injury getting duplicated for that individual. That same injury was getting entered twice somehow. And he's not sure if that's something that was happening in the program or not. So he went back in and found the duplicates for that particular individual. He found the instances when that was occurring. And it did reduce the number of injuries fairly significantly, about like by 1,000, I think.
Yeah, like 20% or something.
Yeah, it was a little over 5,000, I think, 5,500 in your thing, and I think it went down to like 4,100. Okay. So that changed the number of actual injuries reported. It didn't change the number of people injured, but it changed the number of injuries. So anyway, I wanted to pass that on since I
talked to all the departments who were affected with that, they've been notified as far as that they have a, they had a glitch in the system or whether it was them or
I don't think it would have. Yeah, it's not anything that really is impacting the department. I think once we fixed it, I think it'll be fine. It still shows the individual being injured. It just doesn't show that they injured their hand twice. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
So would we have been able to see that?
We don't know. He's looking at the interface to find out whether it was something in the user interface that could have created that or that could have caused that to happen or could have led you to do that without realizing. We don't know. We're not sure.
Because I know when we first rolled this thing out, there was a lot of duplication as far as people being put down twice on your system, and we had to call in and say, "Hey, we can't take this guy out. We need him just once instead of twice." And there was probably four or five people like that.
Yeah, that's correct.
We had to have. Okay, so that, I'm just wondering if that was part of the whenever you put that guy's name up, because if he was entered twice, that it would pop him twice on that call.
Again, when we asked Durrell to look at this the other day, the numbers that he reduced were the number of injuries and the number of exposures, not the number of people. He didn't touch that number, correct?
If they hadn't gone into their FIDO account and looked, they're liable to have some surprises. I mean, some of that stuff that they may not have, because if y'all haven't automatically deleted some of those duplications, they're still sitting there.
Yeah, that's possible. I know that he did go in and delete as many of them as he could find. But I agree with you. There probably are a number of instances where it's been duplicated, and it doesn't appear as exactly duplicated for one reason or another. Maybe like one field is a little bit different. So that's why Durrell hasn't been able to pick up on.
And the big problem, too, is it's on a different screen. You start running down your guys, it may have the duplication on another page. It may not be just boom, boom. It may be two different pages have the guy entered twice.
But this is definitely a learning experience for everybody out in the field using the system and for us, too. So we're trying to work through all of the kinks.
We're working on fixes.
Anytime we've had any issue, we've called in, and it's got handled quick. So
bottom line, we'll work to get the numbers
correct.
I think what you're looking at there, though, is the overall format of the report. I think we have that in pretty good shape.
Cool. Reading through there, I had found one thing, and I just saw my notes here, but on the table 20, burns by body part, I think it's on page 19 of the report, you have a category, face, that shows 22. Then there are four other categories, cheek, chin, nose, and jaw. All those totaled are like 21. So for some reason, could that be a duplicate? I mean, we're picking up, somebody's putting in face, and then they're coming back and doing more specific to jaw, and it's tagging the numbers twice.
Right. This would be probably what you're talking about. I think it could definitely be happening, because if somebody got a burn to the face, they may have also gotten a burn to the chin or the cheek or whatever. So they're probably... I think the idea is for them to tag all of those different areas, but it will show up as these will show up as injuries, whereas there'll still be one individual, but maybe he had three injuries, like three different areas of the face where he was burned, something like that.
And we just need to make sure that if chin, cheek, whatever is a subset of the face, mm-hmm. that it's not counting it twice.
Right.
You know,
I guess that's what jumped out at me.
I'm
going to click face, but if the computer's plugging in, well, he had a burn on his chin, we're counting the same facial chin burn twice. That's going to skew our numbers a little bit.
That's what we're needing to do some work on between now and the time we get this thing finalized.
Okay, so I have a quick question on the cancer stuff. So right now we only have 9 reports of cancer. So if a firefighter goes and he files workers' comp or tries to file a workers' comp claim here in Texas under 419, is that information, it's no longer voluntary since he's the department, if somebody's trying to file a workers' comp claim. So should that not be mandated that it should make the report since under subsection 435.23 subsection A,
yes.
We just talked about it.
Any workers' comp related injury, workers' comp reported injury should be reported to us.
So we only had 9 workers' comp cancer cases.
We have 9 reported to us.
Right.
I don't know. We have more than that. We have 9 reported to us.
We have so more than that. We have 4 times that amount.
I'm just telling you, this is
should
what
we take the voluntary status out of this then and make it where it says if you have a workers' comp claim for cancer that it has to be reported? Because if you read this, it says that it's a voluntary type deal that we encourage you to document it. But if they're looking at the cancer and saying, hey, the cancer side of this thing, they're encouraging us, we don't have to.
So you're saying a statement that says if you report it as workers' comp is required?
Correct.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
Yeah, and the other part about that, I've heard about the medical, but we have medical claims in here all the way through this. Cardiac is a medical claim, pneumonia is a medical claim, neurological is really a medical, so there's medical claims in here too. So
well, there's no question if they have reported it to workers' comp, they're required to report to us. There's no question there. So that's easy to put that statement here to make sure it's clear that.
Because I think that's where we're missing the mark it's encouraged.
Yeah.
Adding that statement to this.
Yeah.
Are you looking at 435.23?
Yeah, I was just reading the first where it said that if you had under any workers' comp claim, you have to. You're supposed to document it.
Yeah, I mean, we could change the language in that rule with a rule code or something like you report all workers' comp claims. We could try to broaden it out if you want to make sure we cover it all. We can change the rule to do that.
Well, the challenge, right? And we all know this. You're never going to catch it all. I mean,
correct.
Guy goes to the dermatologist and they find skin cancer on it. Odds are he's not going to go back and fill out a workers' comp claim.
But most of these, I guarantee you there was more than 9 reported workers' comp claims for cancer in the state of Texas.
Anything that has been reported in
workers' comp. It's 3 times.
So if it all Texas Workers' Compensation Commission reportable injuries.
Right.
And that, I'm just saying I'm not familiar enough with what qualifies as Texas Workers' Compensation reportable injuries.
Well, but, so I would say also, though, that since we're requiring cardiology or cardiology related is in there. There's different medical categories in there that are reported to workman's comp. We should be able to report to do the same thing. And when we do that, when and if we do that, I would think that some kind of notification piece on the web page should go out to everyone that now it's not optional, it's mandatory.
It already is.
No, I mean for the cancer part.
It already is.
But
if it's been reported to workers' comp, it already is mandatory. If they haven't, then obviously they haven't followed our rules. We may or may not be aware of that.
Yeah.
That may be the case with different injuries all over the state. We don't know.
Yeah. Is the word injury hanging people up, though? Versus just a workman's comp claim?
Like I say, it's easy enough for us to clarify in this particular section that if it's been reported to workers' comp, that it is that it needs to be reported to us. That's a requirement.
Take out the word.
That's easy enough. I don't know if y'all were part of the discussion or not. When we went and visited with workers' comp, I actually asked that question of them. I said, do y'all make a distinction between injuries that are reported to you and, for instance, cancer diagnoses in terms of what you're calling it? And they said for their purposes, they don't. They don't make a distinction between the two. So a workers' comp claim is a workers' comp claim to them. So we can certainly do that here.
Absolutely.
As long as it's been reported.
Sure.
There's no question.
Yeah, and that would seem to fit with the statute, too, or it would be fine. If they're reporting the workers' comp claim, then we can get that data.
Correct.
So that would solve our problem.
That's what I was looking for, was that exact right there, what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess the only problem, like Tim said, is that assumes people are making workers' comp claims and that the fire commission or the fire departments are reporting the workers' comp stuff to us. But we can verify if they've made a workers' comp claim and we don't have it with workers' comp.
Absolutely. I can guarantee you there's more than 9 worker comp claims for cancer in the state of Texas last year.
So would we want to, or could we make that one of our recommendations for this going forward, just to clean that up?
The recommendations that should be attached to this report are recommendations that you're making to departments for getting better at reducing injuries. Those are the kind of recommendations that should be included. That isn't what's happened over time, oftentimes, but that's what really is supposed to be included with this.
So, twist it a little bit and say, clarifying what needs to be submitted and received by us will assist us in mitigating cancer down the line. It'll give us the ability to tell departments, hey, this is a real epidemic, and here's the numbers. Here's what we would like you to do.
Yeah, for instance, one of the recommendations could be to departments to clarify the requirement to report, including things like you could make that as one of the recommendations to departments that you need to make sure you're doing that.
So do we need
that? They're supposed to anyway.
Do we need to formulate some language, or what do we need to do?
Well, as it stands right now, I've taken all your time here. Don't go away.
I'm here.
I'm sure they've got.
Oh no, we got more for Greg.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The plan here is this will be presented to the commissioners in April. Between now and the end of August, which is the deadline, I think, for getting this to the state fire marshal for them to include in their report, we should obviously get it in the form we want it, and we should have recommendations included at the end. So, however y'all want to recommend recommendations to the commissioners, you could certainly do that.
So do you want a motion? Or do you want to wait till we finish the whole thing?
I don't think we need to do it right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's tweak the numbers a little bit and spend some more time looking at it, and I think we'll get a lot clearer picture here in a month or two.
I just want to address your concerns really quickly about the number of people that are reporting cancer diagnoses, and I think that there is, just from staff's point of view, more that we could do to make it really obvious to people out in the field that we do want you to report cancer diagnoses, and maybe make it slightly less confusing. There probably is, because there's no way to actually report cancer except for to maybe call it an injury to a body part or an exposure if they think it was an exposure, and then write something in the narrative. That's the only way we can kind of identify that if there's cancer in the narrative somewhere in the description, that's the only way we can identify that there's cancer being reported. So there's confusion about the cancer issue because, you know, we don't know. Are we supposed to put something in the injury reporting application, like a box, cancer? Like, should we do that? Nobody has actually told us, the commission, you know, to do that.
And that is because so much of this has been up in the air. She's making a very good point. So much as this has been up in the air, the question would be, can we revise our injury report module in FIDO to include some sort of a module for cancer reporting? Yeah. you can program all kinds of stuff.
We can do
the
it.
The question
we
is whether,
directed.
Whether we should, what it should look like, and what we're asking for, the whole thing. So this it's all part of the bigger picture here, and so you know we've been hesitant to just jump in there until we all are on the same page as to what we want to do.
Well, I think everybody would agree that we should. It's probably just how we would word that and how we would approach that. And I think the gentleman to my right is working on that, so we'll take a month or two and we'll figure this out. That very well may be a recommendation.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Grace. I'll see if I can word this properly. I'm looking at the previous year's reporting to see what kind of trends have evolved. And I guess my question will boil down to, have we changed the way that we consider the injuries from minor, serious to critical? What defines that? Because here, there's a glowing concern I have. I noticed since 2012, back in 2012, we had 4,264 reporting injuries, and it's significantly down this year from the previous 2 years. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned you haven't received all of the reports yet, so that's understandable. But last year's report, we had 15 critical injuries. In 2016, we had 16 critical injuries. And in 15 and 14, there were similar numbers. All the way back to 2012, there were 14. So for the last 7 years, we've been averaging about 15 critical injuries a year. But this year, that number's up to 426.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So my concern is...
What page are you looking at?
Well, page 39. Page 39, the table 1. And I'm looking at previous years on the same table. Table 1, each of the last 7 years shows the total injuries, and they're broken down by minor, serious, critical, and fatalities. And then obviously the activity. And the activity's changed a little over the years because we've tweaked that to a certain extent. But it's really still the same. But if you look at any of the previous years, we've never had more than 16 critical injuries in one calendar year. Yet last year that number was 426, even though the overall numbers are down. So my question is, has something happened to the way we grade or rank the seriousness of the level of the injury?
Yeah, the definitions haven't changed, but it is curious. I agree with you. The interface has changed. Maybe that's throwing people off a little bit, you know, the way that you report.
That would be my guess.
Because we have this new system.
Because, I mean, that should be a glowing concern to us if our injury rate went from 15 a year to 426 with just critical injuries. I guess my question is maybe, to me, a serious injury is a serious injury. I don't know if those two numbers should be lumped together.
Don't we have those things defined in here somewhere in the report?
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had that in there.
I thought I did, too.
Early on.
It's on page 8, in injuries by activity.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I think we need to look at the user interface and make sure we haven't created some confusion in the user interface and people are reporting something incorrectly.
Does the commission offer like a workshop over reporting that since we changed the interface?
So what happens, we've been talking about needing to do workshops and
just something to at least even like a video that they can watch and walk them through that so that they don't miss these things.
We've been talking about instructional videos for 5 years around here, and it's all a matter of resources, time, people, and
money.
Resources to do it. Yeah, we need all kinds of tutorials done, and we just haven't had a chance. But yes.
Hey, Grace, awesome job on the abstract. I know that's what we talked about in that committee that we had before, was really outlining some of the major trends that we saw and getting that information up to the very front to kind of give something out there. So good job to you and the staff for really working hard on that. So
Well, if you have any suggestions for how to make it more clear for people to not get confused when they're reading it, send them to me. Happy to make changes, make improvements.
Well, what is our don't laugh. What is our deadline for reporting? It's January 1, right?
Right. I mean, you would think so.
Well, I mean,
I think it's all kind of directory. Nobody's going to get upset with you if you don't do it, I don't think. It's not a penalty if you don't do it.
No, I mean for the yearly. The yearlies.
There is a time frame that people are supposed to report, but...
So do we have what percentage of departments did we have report last year?
I don't know.
I don't know. We didn't track it. Or we could find out. I don't have the numbers, though.
I would think that that's something that should be included.
It's been right between 89 and 94 the last two or three years.
And I'll tell you, I intentionally left it off of this. We talked about whether we wanted it or not, but that is because of the way the whole system works, it's really problematic to begin with because of the whole idea. The only people who are supposed to report are people who actually had an injury. So does that mean that a department didn't participate if they didn't have an injury? You got a little bitty department, they didn't do anything, or you have a fire marshal's office, you know, which is a regulated entity, and they didn't have anything during the year. You know, does that mean they didn't participate? So that participation rate, I think, is kind of misleading. I think it's more important to know how many injuries were reported.
Sure.
And I think it's more important to know if somebody had an injury and didn't report it, then we would want to know about that, of course. But that participation rate is probably something that we never should have started pursuing because it's inherently inaccurate. It's filled with inaccuracies.
Well, so a simpler way maybe to do it or more relevant would be that 100% of departments with injuries report their injuries.
Or you have everybody logged in.
How could we even know that?
If I could know that, that'd be great. But there's no way I'm going
to
know that.
Is it possible to, whenever the inspectors go out, to follow up on something like that, to at least have last year's reportable injuries, at least, hey, you reported last year, or, hey, we showed that last year you did not, your department did not file any reports. Was that because, and kind of gauge it off that?
I know that, and I don't want to speak for Paul, but I know when the compliance officers go visit the departments and they do their inspections, they do address injury reporting. Yeah.
I didn't know if they follow up from the last year's numbers, like, hey, will you show that you didn't report anything last year, you just had a great year?
I don't know.
You have to check every month.
We don't refer to last year's numbers. We'll probably come up here so we can capture it all on the...
Sorry.
That's all right.
The compliance officers do check the department's injury reporting to make sure that they're reporting.
Yes, sir.
But we don't refer to last year's numbers and say there's an inconsistency. We don't do that.
No, I know they ask. I mean, they came in and goes, because we did ours, he's like, okay, you've been reporting. It's a check mark box that he pulls up that we had been submitting ours. Now, but whether we are a month or two behind, he didn't look at that. But consistently, he's looking at, yes, your department is reporting.
That is what we check. We check to make sure they are reporting as required, but we don't refer to last year's numbers or last month's numbers, or we don't have a way to say, did you report everything you should have?
Just curious.
Yes, sir.
There is something that I'm assuming is still functional in FIDO. We've had so many changes in that thing. Y'all who log into the FIDO department administrator thing could probably say, we do have the thing there that asks a department to indicate if in a given month they didn't have anything. We do ask them to do that. I'm assuming that's still there.
It's there.
And I think there should still be a reminder that comes up when you log in and you pull up your department thing that says you hadn't done January. Did you have anything in January? Now, that's still not, it was just a flag that popped up or is something, I think, at the top of the page that just reminded people that one hadn't been done yet, if you wouldn't mind going and do that. But again, that's not a requirement. It's just something that we asked them to do so that we could try to get some feedback from every department.
Was that zero reporting thing?
Yes.
To a zero every month?
Yeah.
I don't know if it pops up, though, now.
I'll check and see. It should, if it doesn't, it should be.
Zero reporting is a lot easier now because you can just hit the button.
Right, right.
Is this cross-referenced with workers' comp? I mean, do we know?
No. That would probably
that's be what we need to be done.
That's what I was getting at was, would that give us a better view of that then? If that was, I know that requires work and it requires hours, but if there's a huge difference, if we pull just a lump sum of the in-year numbers from workers' comp to see what last year's numbers were to our numbers, and then we can really see we do have a problem. We have a problem with reporting, and maybe we need to go back and put some.
That is a gigantic workload issue.
Okay.
That would be like a grant we'd have to get, like two people to try to merge those systems. I mean, Grace can tell you. She's probably the most
important. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure the numbers are kind of similar because I was talking with one of the guys over there and they only had, you know, a small handful of cancers that they could actually pinpoint to, like a fire department or a fire.
When it comes to cancer stuff.
Yeah, cancer.
I think you're talking
about
injuries in general.
And just in general. Yeah. That's what I was curious.
Well, but I think what she's saying, there's a correlation. They had a very low number of cancer reported that matches what we've got. So that's a reasonable indicator that those numbers are probably very close.
Problem is, though, we're on two separate systems,
right,
and the statute kind of assumes one system, and we're trying to match it all up and make sure we catch everything.
Yeah, I don't see how you could do that.
But isn't that still part of our charge to be evaluating the data? That's part of the mission statement.
Well, I think we're evaluating it, but I think what you're suggesting is probably almost impossible.
Could we just get aggregate and not the full report from Workman's Comp?
I'm not really sure what that means.
could we just get the total number of injuries reported by fire departments and then match it to our total number as a start? Rather than,
I guess the first question would be if they even track it. That
yeah, way. That's fine.
My memory is they have the different codes, and you have to trace it down, and you're not even sure whether it's a fire department.
Oh, really?
They probably don't track it by profession.
There's certain workers' codes that you might be able to pull, but
I'll track it by city.
I know early on in this process, back when Jake and Miles and all those guys were dealing with this, I know they went and had those discussions with them early on, and it was just not a realistic thing to do, apparently, which is why they ended up coming up with what we got.
No reason to explore, but if it can't be done, it can't be done. It's just the reality of it.
It seems like we do this every year, but it comes back to the educational piece, the fire service out there, and that is a challenge still. I mean,
I think what
there's no way you can go to every fire department and do a workshop on how to do this. We need to find some kind of way to do a better job of educating this collectively, not just staff.
When I look at our own aggregate data, with the exception of these anomalies, which is kind of a weird thing, the way that critical happened to me, that almost tells me that they were classifying it incorrectly. And that may be a misunderstanding of the users. But when you look at the overall numbers, year in and year out, we're right around 4,000 individuals, sometimes a few hundred less, sometimes a few hundred more. The percentages of injuries, of different activities that are occurring when an injury occurs, is very consistent year in and literally from the time we started doing this has been very consistent. So I think that we're probably not, we may be missing some getting reported to us, but I think all in all, I think we seem to have a pretty accurate picture because it has remained very consistent over the years, which would at least tell me that I think we're probably getting the vast majority that are supposed to be reported to us. And number two, we're not doing a whole lot better job of fixing the problems that exist there.
It may just be that it's just a really dangerous job, and we've done about all we can do.
There's no doubt about it. But
how much in this 6-8 years have we increased in numbers? So our 4,000 may be the same, but I know in our area we've probably put on 1,000 firefighters in a 4-county area. Because we've got cities in our areas that built stations. I mean, they're building stations, opening stations monthly.
I certainly wouldn't want to use as an excuse for not trying to make this better.
But I mean, our numbers are.
They talk about how
our overall firefighters in the state of Texas.
That many firefighters die per year nationwide, and we have more firefighters than we did 10 years ago, but there's still that same number, and they're trying to attack that number with LODD conferences and everything else. It's the same thing here. We keep running into the same situations. We keep doing the same things, it appears, that we keep getting injured doing the same types of activities, many of which aren't even emergency activity. You know what I'm saying? Those trends are there, and I'm certainly open to how this agency can help address the problem. But
I'm not saying our percentages don't need to continue to go down, but we also have more people doing them. So,
yeah.
But you're right. We do the same thing over and over again and have the same injuries. Mm-hmm.
There were some great ideas that started to come out of the ad hoc committee, but that has failed to ever meet again. So I think that if we continue to do those things, we talked about some great initiatives that we could get going on to see trends on a quarterly level to get those things out there to see if we can highlight those things. And we can use the reports from the year before to highlight trends that we see before summertime comes up and what we see a lot of the injuries that come up at those times. And so I do think that's important that ad hoc committee at least meets again to discuss these things, because I felt like we were on the right page, but it's come to a halt.
That's what I saw.
Ask her. So, Grace, on page 20 or page 52, either one. 20 of the report, 52 of the doctor, the packet. On the burns by body part and the facial burns. And I see there's been a pretty serious jump from past years, like 100% jump almost, or a little more. And so is there a way for us to track back and see dive a little deeper into it to see what those injuries were from? Or
I'm sure there's a way that we could go in, or I could go in and look at each of those injury reports and just read and, report back on that.
If it's a training piece, or if it's an equipment piece, or, because the same, that's a pretty big jump for one year.
I still think it could be a duplication.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. It could
probably used to only be the one category of face, whereas this year we're seeing it broken into
three different categories.
And chin and nose and things like that. So,
we were asking for totals from IT. Well, if you don't query it correctly, we get incorrect numbers. So we need to go back and look at that.
Stick a pin in that till next time. So.
Yeah. I think Grace and everybody involved in this continue to do an outstanding job on this.
Oh,
we could pick it apart. I think you're always going to find problems with data, but I think overall, surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, our injuries remain fairly low considering the number of people we have out there every day doing what they do. We can always make it better, and we'll probably keep trying, but I think it's even just for early numbers, this is a great report. Some of the changes are good, and I think we'll work through finding the duplicates.
We will.
I don't see any need for any action other than just reviewing it. But we've reviewed it pretty well.
I think we'll continue to.
And
I think we do need to make the statement on the cancer stuff as far as just as the workers' comp stuff.
Adding that statement in the report?
Yes, sir.
We can do that.
Pretty easy.
What's your pleasure? Do you want us to just submit something? Or?
Well, I think these numbers are early. You're just showing us the early numbers. I think we'll get some more exact, if excuse the term, but probably at our June meeting. Well, maybe even next month we'll have some better numbers than what we're seeing right now. So I think maybe we wait until June and see where we land.
I mean the verbiage to clarify the cancer thing.
I think Tim got a pretty good handle on it already. It's pretty easy.
I think was what I described what your intent was. Yeah, I mean, I think we can come up with some language to make sure people understand that one is that it's a requirement. If it had been reported to workers' comp, it is a requirement.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And next month, when we report our comments to the commission on this, we could include that, and it'll probably already be in there, but we can certainly discuss that then.
We can make that happen.
Okay. All right. You guys want to take a break, or you want to push on? We don't have a lot left. Let's take 10 minutes.
I need to get up and make sure this knee's still moving. We need to oil Swindle's hip.
Yeah.
In the chair.
No kidding. We will resume.
Item number 9, yes. Update on request by committee member Daniel DeYeer on producing an annual report regarding compliance, inspection, activities, results, and common violations.
So I had gotten with IT, and there's all kinds of data that we can pull. The system is still a bit of a work in progress. So the information that's there, I feel like, is probably at this point not real useful. I think we will get there. If we do go and just do a data pull, I think because of that, it's not necessarily real reliable as far as what we'd be looking at, because of some of the issues that we have with the compliance guys putting stuff into the system. We will get there, though. And I know we can get to a point where we'll be able to do that. We're just not there yet.
Okay.
We can certainly work, and I would suggest working toward creating perhaps an annual report on general compliance inspection activities and things that we're finding. I would suggest doing that. You know, I'm thinking perhaps with the start of the new fiscal year, which would be September 1 for us, maybe that's when everything will be, we'll have our system working the way it needs to be, and all of our guys out in the field are getting the stuff in as it needs to be put in there. And I think by then we could start doing that and get some good data.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the intention, this committee wants to try to do whatever we can to help staff, obviously.
Got any way we can enhance. IT guys out there that you can loan?
Well, I mean, if that's something we need to address, I don't see why we wouldn't.
That's the big challenge for this agency, I can tell you. You know, everything is IT-based. Everything. And resources are limited, so we can only move so fast getting it done.
I think one of the concerns that I know that I had is if your inspectors keep seeing the same common violations out there, mm-hmm. if there's some way that we can address that in the future with training or education or just information so that they'll know how to be more compliant in the future, that we would like to streamline that in some
sure.
form or fashion.
Well, and again, I think once we've got the system working the way it needs to, and what I'm describing here, an example is some of the information from some inspections is sitting in a hard copy file or a digital file. Some of it had made it into the system. We have it all, but it's hard to compile at this point because of where we've got it. It's in two different places because of issues that we're running into getting getting stuff reported into what we call FARM, which is the staff side of FIDO. So we have the information. It would be just real difficult to compile at this point. Once we fixed the programming issues that we have, we'll be good to go. And it'll be pretty easy to pull all that together.
Any estimation on the timeline?
Well, that's what I say. I think our target can be, you know, with the start of the new fiscal year, we should have everything working the way it needs to be on the compliance side, where they're getting all the information in the same location so we can pull it all back out as we need to for reports.
Would you be able to report in September activities in 2019, or are you just thinking that you would really start to compile it? So
I think we'll have the system fixed by September 1. Or before, but.
Tim, would you feel comfortable and maybe at the April meeting we offer this as a suggestion to the commissioners and that work towards doing this?
Sure.
And we could speak to that, give you to September to get the system tweaked, and then we start it based on the fiscal year 1920, and it'd just be a work in progress. It'd take another year, but it certainly be moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a date certain for it to begin.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And a date is far enough out, there's still time to work with it and tweak it and address the issue. So unless anybody's opposed, or Daniel, I mean, we could offer this as a suggestion in our report next month. At least spur the discussion amongst the commissioners with it, and Tim could speak to his ideas on it.
Mm-hmm. And again, just so you all know, it's not that we don't have all of the data from the inspections. It's just in two different places at this point, and so it would be real hard to compile. So if you can give me the opportunity to get our system functioning the way it needs to, then it'll all be going to the same place, and it'll be very easy to draw it all back out or whatever component of it out that we want, whatever piece of data we want.
Why are we doing this?
Well, I think what's the purpose?
We want to identify the common violations out there so that we can drill down more on what the problems are. What does the Fire Service of Texas not understand or not know about the rules that they're being held accountable to?
And don't take me wrong. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm looking at it more of from some of the cities. It's going to be a budgetary thing.
No, it's not. It's going to be a report from staff.
Yeah, it is, because there's a lot of things that they're not doing that they need to be doing, and they're not providing things for cleaning bunker gear.
I think that's our job to show them.
I understand that, but that's also, if we go now and we say we're going to go to September, then we go to the next September of 20, we're given 2 years. And we need to be cleaning gear now. We don't need to be cleaning it in 2020.
Right, but
that's all I'm saying. I agree with what you're saying. I just think it needs to also follow up with the fact that they need to be looking at this as the budgetary item that's going to come at them, and so they need to go ahead and get ready for this.
Well, your example with the bunker gear, though, what if every department in the state of Texas is compliant with that, and there have been no violations in the last 5 years? Now, throwing that out there, I know you're all laughing, but where would you prove me wrong with that statement right now?
Real easy, real easy. Just find out how many of them have extractors.
That,
how many of them? No, it does. It does make,
because
it costs. It if you don't have an extractor, you've got to be. You've got to make sure you're getting that stuff clean. That's not cheap.
But regardless of where we go with the discussion or the argument, we need to have empirical data that actually shows.
I agree.
A picture.
I agree. I'm just saying there's more that goes with this than just the data.
All I'm asking for is the work that they've done and they do every single day, that we see it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm asking. That's all I request.
I think, Ken, what you're saying is we need to hold them accountable. What we're saying is we need this report to help illustrate the true problem area so we can.
Right.
Today, we can't.
Right.
Tell them, hey.
And I guess my deal is the nine guys that we got down for cancer is bogus. That's a BS thing. That is not right. That number is not right. Nothing against anybody else, but I can guarantee you, I talk to guys every day that have cancer, and it's from what we do and what they've done over years. I don't want to wait another year and a half to 2 years.
We've been waiting 10 years.
I understand that.
So
I'm not going to be happy with waiting any time.
So could I interject?
Please.
Maybe in this case, we could draw down on the compliance officer's inspections to check off for the dirty gear. That might give us a place to start, because there is a box that they're supposed to be checking off if they find dirty gear in their inspections. Not with their cleaning, but if they find dirty gear, that would be an indication that the department isn't cleaning maybe the way they're supposed to. So maybe as a stopgap to address Ken's issue, which is pretty much mine and probably Buford's too, everybody's issue, is how can we do that? Maybe that might be in the interim just a one category that we can look at.
It really all has to do with where the data is ending up. Is it ending up in a file on one of our drives, or did it actually make it into the FIDO system, the farm system? That's the question. So now it's sitting in two different places. It's not that we don't have it. It's a matter of it now having to go in and try to pull it all together. Once the system is operating as it should be, we could give you a report every week on, you know, IT showed me all of the categories. There's 3-4 pages of categories and subcategories of things that will get entered into the system by the compliance guys, as long as it's working the way it should from a remote location, which happens to be part of the problem some of the time. As long as it's working, it'll make it in there, and there'd be tons of good data, but right now, it's not all in that one location. Regardless whether it's clean gear or CE or whatever, it's all the problem is the same for any of it. Some inspections or inspectors have not been able to get the data in there, so they're saving it in a file like we've always done. Some of it is making it into the new system, but it's just not working, functioning the way it needs to be at this point. Once it's functioning, it's real easy to pull the data back out.
And maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I think the original intent of this is to develop some type of performance measure for the agency. How are we doing? Are we really making this better, or are we just holding our own from year to year? An annual report's going to show you that. Once a week, once a month is not going to show us that. It might show you the individual departments, but you're going to struggle to find the historical data of that. If we start doing an annual performance measure, hey, here's where a problem is, and then the next year, look, we reduced that number, but we got an issue over here. That's how I interpret where this conversation started.
Would it be possible to use this data whenever it does come available, similar to like the injury reporting, between the meetings, between the commission meetings? We have these fire chiefs that come, that have to be at these meetings, show a trend between the meetings, and then also use it at the end of the year altogether. But then we can go, hey, in the last 3 months, we had this many inspections that were performed. These are the top three things that we saw were violations, these three items, as well as we had this many reported injuries, and these were the top couple things that we saw, just to try to get it in the forethought of the fire chiefs that are coming here, like, hey, you know what, we haven't addressed that, or hey, you know what, we might be in violation of that, let's get it before we get it. And so, and then we still use this at the end of the year. It's one more thing that drops on the chief's desk at the end of the year to read this report, but if it's continuously put out there, maybe that brings some more awareness to it as well.
Well, if I can, most of your discussion is about a report related to the findings in inspections, a report that might be quarterly or monthly or annual, and that's good, and I'd like for us to do that. I just wanted to be clear about one thing. There was some reference about wait a year until we get PPE cleaned, and I wanted to be clear, we are
I don't think that was said.
I wasn't saying anybody said. I just wanted to make sure that when we do our inspections currently, regardless of whether we can compile reports on a regular basis, when we do our inspections, if we identify gear that needs to be serviced, that's part of our inspection process and the follow through. I just wanted to make sure.
I think your point point was, is it happening statewide and how much?
Correct. And we were talking about it being a year and us holding off another year. That's what I was talking about. It wasn't inspection or bunker gear being cleaned. That would be ridiculous.
No, I think the year is for us to get that broad picture of what happened during the course of the year. It's certainly within that report. If there was some major violation, that's going to show up in there. It's going to hopefully, most likely, show up as addressed. You know, this was corrected immediately, you know, because with any inspection, you get 30 days to prove that you fixed whatever they found.
Right.
And Daniel, I mean, this is your brainchild, but I see it more as a performance measure for us. How are we doing?
If Paul was to tell us right now that 17% of all your inspections, fire departments fail in this particular area, whatever it is, if we saw that right now, I would ask the question, well, how does that compare to 5 or 10 years ago? Are we getting better or are we getting worse? Well, we have no data to even compare it. Even when we are successful in putting this report together, it'll just be a baseline for the future. We still can't go back and see what we've accomplished or haven't accomplished. And that's what we're wanting to do. We're wanting to accomplish something. That's why everyone in this room is here today. So if we can see that you keep repeatedly seeing the same violations, then certainly we can address that through education or training or just information so that departments are aware, here's where you're probably going to fail when you show up to inspect them. And that's all I'm looking for, is that we have a report. So when we sit here and say, we want to help staff, we want to help you guys, where do I start? I do want to help you, but a lot of times you say, yeah, we need to help, but we don't even know where to start asking on your end.
And we'll probably see a direct correlation to these injury numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we were 3 years into this injury reporting before we really had a very good idea of how we were doing. And so I see this as the next step of that, because we'll be able to correlate face injuries to compliance issues found and things of that. I mean, with the injury reporting, you know, we found a glove problem. That was 10 years ago, but we found it in 90 days. We figured out we had a problem with a batch of gloves out there, and we were able to impact that being corrected. So I think to Daniel's point, Buford's point, we'll probably start seeing big red flags at the quarterly mark that you guys would recognize and show us. But we got to start tracking it in that form before we could ever have that.
You know, I can tell you right now, anecdotally, what I hear, because obviously the guys are doing inspections, and when they come across issues that are of importance and that need full discussion, then I get involved in the discussion. So anecdotally, I can tell you what I'm seeing, what I'm remembering. But capturing the data goes back to what Tim's saying. It's not captured in the system currently in a way that can be queried and pulled out factually. When Tim says we have
it's
the data.
It's not complete.
Sure.
It's not complete.
Sure. No.
Yeah. All we have now is the paper that they fill out, right? Yeah. The only thing that you could capture now would be the total number of violations each department that you went into had, right?
You'd have to, you'd have to ask Darrell, because he's the one that queries the system, the farm system. I don't
worry. I know we could do that. We could do that before, because I know we've had that for a meeting one time before. So, again, I would say because of the way the system is functioning at the moment, a lot of it may simply be in files. And not necessarily compiled.
Big overhaul, huh, in that system?
Yeah.
You may recall that was January 18 when we converted to the new system?
Yeah.
January 18. So when we converted January 18, we began to enter data from our inspections, and we've discovered that it's the data is not... The capability to enter the data is not what we need to be able to produce the kind of report that you're requesting.
Well, I appreciate you starting and all the work that you have put in. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we'll get there. Have this on what we present in April, just as a discussion. We'll just kick it off with them.
Okay. You got that? What's coming in?
All right. Thank you. Anything else on nine?
Item 10, discussion and possible action on setting future meeting dates, locations, and agenda items.
I think we're all set for the year. Can you just review those so everybody has them?
Can we move that next one to South Padre Island? Or?
I'm all for it.
Yeah. First half.
The June meeting is scheduled for June 27th. September 19th and December the 4th.
All right. Any agenda items for our next meeting that anybody wants to see at this time? All right. I believe we're at number 11.
Item 11, adjourn meeting.
I'll set a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Let me turn this off before I tell you what I want.
Now to get on the road.